ladies and gentlemen. It's the show that celebrates WWE. It's Gorilla Position.
Hello, you, and welcome to Gorilla Position. Thank you very much for hitting the download button on this, your pro wrestling slash sports entertainment podcast of pleasure. My name's James D'Lo, your host and your guide through the wonderful world of WWE. Thank you for tuning into this episode 294 of the biggest and best WWE podcast in the UK, the only show of its kind to be supported, endorsed and promoted by WWE themselves. It is Friday, 20th of November. Man, Christmas is coming soon. Oh, I'm getting excited. It is the race to the finish line. Everything's gone manic with work. Struggling to find time to record the podcast, to be completely honest. That's why we're doing it on a Friday night. It is definitely that time of year again. Everyone is busy. Race to the finish line for Christmas. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. And I cannot believe the end of this year is going to bring our 300th episode of GP. How exciting is that? I don't think we can do a live event for it. I'm sorry. As depressing as that is, I don't think we're going to manage it this year for obvious reasons. But maybe next year. Hopefully next year. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. Hope you've had a lovely week. Coming up on the show today, me and Kevin Clifton will be talking all things Smackers, all things Raw, NXT, a bit of NXT UK. And my superstar guest is none other than the voice of WWE. Mr. Michael Cole is on the show. Love him or hate it. Do you know what? I don't know why anybody doesn't like Michael Cole. To me, he is a legend. He is a legend in this game, and he is the voice, like it or lump it, he is the voice of WWE and does an incredible job. So very pleased to have him on the show this week, talking all things, well, talking his career, talking favourite moments and matches, and a lot, of course, about Survivor Series happening this Sunday night on the WWE Network, and the 30th anniversary of The Undertaker. Can you believe they've managed? I mean, incredible. To the day they are holding Survivor Series 30 years later after Taker debuted. And I'm very, very excited. So to talk about all of this and lots more with me, he is a goosebump. He is a GP brother. He is a Strictly Come Dancing champion. He's a WWE lifer. His name is Mr. Kevin Clifton. How are you, Kevs?
What's up, Oos?
What's up, Oos?
All right.
Have you had a good week?
Yeah, good week. Cheers. And I was just thinking, as you were saying that,
yeah,
could we not do, for the 300th episode, a GP live in some sort of Thunderdome?
Oh, don't put that pressure on me. Got enough to do. Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to do something virtual. I mean, I wonder if we can. I wonder if we can. We don't have a long time to organise it, but no. our GP faithful, our listeners, are very good at rallying round. If we say we're organising something, they, you know, if we build it, they shall come. They are that loyal. So maybe we'll do it. You've planted a seed there, Kev, and I'm annoyed you have.
And also,
go on.
Just mentioning The Undertaker at Survivor Series.
Mm.
In your opinion, do you think that this genuinely is like, this is it? This is a good night, farewell. He's going to bow out in the ring with, you know, whatever he's going to do, if he's going to make an appearance and sort of it's going to be a goodbye. Or do you think this is a goodbye and an interruption, and it's the beginning of the end, if you know what I mean?
I love the way you said that. Goodbye, good night. I love it if they would just say good night, Undertaker. That's quite
good
sweet.
Or do you think it's not quite the end on this night, it's the beginning of the end, and actually WrestleMania is the end?
Well, that is what I'm starting to think. But the problem is, if you fantasy book and you start getting overexcited, Survivor Series then becomes a disappointment when it is his actual goodbye.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I almost don't want to talk about it too much, because I think we could get ourselves super giddy about the potential, you know, this potential moment that we could see on Sunday in the Thunderdome. Is it Randy Orton? I mean, I've seen people saying that Sting is going to come out, and Sting and Taker are going to have a big match at Mania. I have no idea. If I was fantasy booking, if I was dreaming, I would absolutely say somebody comes out interrupts his final promo, shows the ultimate disrespect to the greatest legend of the game ever, slaps him about the head, and, you know, brutalizes him. And he's like, yeah, happy 30th anniversary, Mark. And then walks out. And then that sets up something amazing for Mania. I would love it. Whether or not we're going to get it, I've no idea. But if you could choose a talent to do that to take her a Survivor Series, would you? Because we loved the idea of it being Randy Orton. We thought it made so much sense. Would it still be the Viper for you?
I don't know if it would now. I think earlier in the year, definitely, when he was going through that legend killer phase again, just sort of taking everyone out, and the whole him and Edge thing, when he was just on fire.
Yeah.
But now he's sort of lost three times to Drew McIntyre.
Mm.
So, I don't know if it would be now. My instinct at the moment, and it can probably change, but just goes, would it not be the Fiend?
Yeah, I mean, there is very much a torch to pass there, isn't there?
Yeah,
because the Fiend, especially now that he has, I mean, obviously you can't compare Alexa Bliss to Paul Bearer, but you know, but he has that someone by his side now, and that act is becoming even more special as the weeks go on, and we're just loving the Fiend, and I think he's a monster. But we're loving him, and all the fans respect him. And I feel like if anyone's going to, you know, take over the mantle from Taker, it's going to be the Fiend. And so if there's a torch to be passed, it's him. That makes total sense.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. But like you say, we shouldn't get overly carried away with what's going to happen in our own heads. And then it's just actually he just needs to have a rest now. And he wants to say goodnight. And then we all go, oh, but what about the Fiend at Mania?
Yeah. But the Fiend would have to go over, right? He'd have to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But surely that's how the Undertaker would want it as well.
Yeah, you would think so.
On his back. Yeah. Like it's old school.
I could talk about Undertaker all the time. And we discussed this last week. Interviews and stuff were embargoed until this week. But obviously you were on the Zoom chat with Taker, so we've got some content from that going up on our socials over the next couple of days in the build-up to Survivor Series. So follow us on Twitter if you don't do so already, at WWEGP. Should we talk about Friday Night SmackDown from last week?
Yeah, let's do it.
I thought it was a really, really good show. By the way, as by way of an apology to fans who were expecting the show on Wednesday this week, had another manic week where I've been filming on location, so just physically couldn't sort of create the podcast on Wednesday. I sent a bit of an apology tweet and said that anyone who replies with their favorite ever word will hear it on the show. So somehow I've got to try and fit in loads of random words in this show, like poppycock, for example, and Alan Partridge's aha, rancorous. Have you ever heard of the word rancorous?
Rancorous?
Yeah.
No.
Rancorous.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah. You're such a catty wampus, Kev.
I'm not sure how to respond.
No. Okay. Well, anyway, let's continue with this smorgasbord of WWE action that has carried on over the last 7 days. So SmackDown, Roman Reigns and the Drew McIntyre promo. I was all eyes and all ears for this one. I loved it.
Yeah. Do you know what? At first, when Drew came out at the beginning, My initial thought, as much as I love Drew, my initial thought was, well, there goes the brand split again. There's literally no point.
Yeah.
But then I very quickly forgot about that, because these two are just in the form of their lives, aren't they? Roman and Drew are just bringing it at the moment. And as soon as they got into it, I was so hooked and so invested. And I think I even wrote down, because obviously we didn't know what was to come and what was going to happen, you know, because at this point, Randy's the WWE champion. And I wrote down, like, I want to see Roman versus Drew. As soon as this had finished, I was like, this is what I want. I want to see this match now.
It was really exciting. And actually, to be honest, to be completely frank, this was a moment where I loved someone from a different brand coming over because of the way they presented it. A, they were really surprised that Drew was there, but B, you had Roman going, I don't watch Raw. No one watches Raw.
Nobody does.
And then you have Paul Heyman piping up in the background going, you're not missing much.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it's moments like that when you think, oh, okay, I get this sort of, you know, brand supremacy stuff. If you actually sort of sell it to me and give me, you know, if Roman is arrogant enough to be like, I do not watch that show. And then Paul is slagging it off. Then automatically you're thinking, oh, SmackDown's on fire. Like, that's the A show. And then you actually build a bit of a rivalry and it makes sense. So this was one of the moments where they, you know, they had the crossover and I thought it worked brilliantly.
Yeah. And do you know, the other bit that I loved was that obviously Drew came in and was, you know, I love that. Roman is like the man right now, you know, he's the big dog and everyone's sort of, even, you know, Paul Heyman is so intimidated by him and everyone's intimidated by him now. But one, I love that Drew isn't intimidated by him. He's just going to get right up in his face. And he started saying to him that basically, you know, this whole year while all this has been going on and you disappeared for, you know, however long, you just left the fans, you left WWE and someone else had to carry the torch, you know, like so someone else had to be there to be the face of WWE and to run things and you left and I took over and blah 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 blah. And at the end of it, Roman just looked at him and in that calm Roman way just went, that's all true, but I'm back now.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my god. Yeah. Like, didn't need any more than that.
You could say it's says sesquipedalian, sesquipedalian.
I mean,
it's that's someone who uses.
Many people have said it.
Well, exactly.
It's as true today as it's ever been, James.
It's someone who overuses long words when shorter words are available. The irony is, it's an incredibly long word, and I definitely mispronounced it. I was probably just procrastinating. I'm such a shucky ducky quack quack. I'm an idiot. I'm rambunctious. If anything, I'm really annoyed. I did this on Twitter because I don't want to let anyone down, and it's sort of annoying. Anyway, it was really really good. And what I loved also is you had Drew, and it makes sense now we've seen Raw. But on Friday night, you had Drew looking Roman in the eyes, going, "I'm going to go to Raw. I'm going to beat Randy to become the WWE champion, and then I'm going to go to Survivor Series and I'm going to beat you and I'm going to show you who the secondary champ really is." And just the conviction in his voice. And I remember Bret Hart saying in an interview once, he was like, as a babyface, if you know you're going to win, you can promise it. You can go out there and in a promo, you can say, I am going to beat you. Because then when you do, you haven't let anyone down. And yeah. I know this is really old school, but I always liked that. So, and I don't know how many sort of performers, you know, kind of go by this rule that Brett did. And he was obviously very serious about what he did, but he, you know, he never wanted to let any fans down. So if he knew that he wasn't going to go over at a pay-per-view, he would make sure that in the promos leading up to it, he would never make that promise. So it's really interesting, isn't it? And so, and then just, you know, hearing Drew in this promo with Roman and then knowing that he was, you know, that essentially Monday Night Raw was entirely built around him becoming a bigger star than he was before. It all tied in really nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. It was excellent. And yeah. And I love that. I'm just saying, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to beat Randy Orton and then I'm gonna beat you. And I loved, like, right, if we just skip right to the end, after he's beaten Jay, and he's going, he's shouting at Roman, "You understand me now? You understand me now?" And Roman, there was almost like this. Roman's still massively confident, but there was almost like just a 5% of respect there. Yeah. And he said, "Get yourself one of these," pointing to his title. "Get yourself one of these, and then we'll talk."
Yeah.
It was almost like Roman wants it because he saw what he can do and he was like, all right, this could be interesting. Go. It's like Roman wants him to go and beat Randy. Yeah. Go and get yourself one of these and then we'll talk.
It was so well done. It was all so well done. And, you know, so after, well, sort of midway through this promo, Jay came out and sort of interrupted things and got, you know, sort of inserted himself in Roman's business. And he was saying to Drew, he's like, hey, what are you doing on SmackDown? This is Friday nights. This isn't Monday nights. And then he started saying, Daniel Bryan, I'm going to get him. Kevin Owens, I'm going to get him. Seems like I've got to get you too. And and he challenged Drew to this match, and it became this sort of special cross-brand unsanctioned match, which was a great main event, a great position for Jey Uso, and just really exciting. And also later on in the night, sort of midway through the, or it might even be in the next segment, I can't remember, but backstage you had Roman yelling at Jay.
Yeah.
Like going for him. And it's just, it's all being done so well.
Yeah, because you don't really see Roman yelling like that so much. Like no. He's very like calm now in his confidence and his arrogance.
Yeah.
When he was angry with Jay, it's there's a level to it where you can almost imagine that like he's angry at Jay. But also it's gotten under his skin slightly because it's Drew McIntyre, you know? So as a fan, it's like, maybe there's a little percentage of Roman that thinks that he's going to have a difficult night with Drew.
It's
not going to be easy.
It was really, really good. Really, really good. And just, I mean, we'll talk about the title switch when we talk about Raw, but I'm excited to see Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns. I'm more excited to see that than I was Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton.
Definitely. It's suddenly become a big sort of main event feel match, hasn't it?
Yeah, big fight feel.
Yeah.
Sami Zayn, and I only wanted to mention this quickly, but he had a match with Apollo Crews, and it was a match for the US Championship. But I really liked it. I mean, we know how great Sami Zayn is, but he was cutting this promo before the match going, this match was made less than an hour before we came on air. He was like saying 7:20 p.m. they made this match. And I love that because it felt real. And it's that thing I talk about a lot about, you know, I want it to feel like a live TV broadcast where it's a bit more chaotic and decisions are being made last minute. And that's probably the reality. That match probably was made 40 minutes before the show started. But I really liked that. And I liked the sense of it. The fact that Apollo was a former US champ and Sammy's going on to face Bobby Lashley, the current US champ at Survivor Series. So it was a nice tease. And I love the ending as well.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly what I wrote down, that my favorite bit was him complaining about he only had 1 hour's notice before he had to defend his title. Like it's almost as well, like, because it's the Intercontinental title, you know, like we've talked about this before, like from when we grew up watching it, the Intercontinental title was so important, you know, like it's such an important title. And he's going, really? For the Intercontinental title match, you're giving me 1 hour's notice?
Yeah.
Like it's almost like you're disrespecting me. You're also disrespecting the title.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it felt totally real.
It's so good, and he's just one of the best. I think a minute ago I just said it was a US Championship match. I meant obviously Intercontinental Championship match. Yeah, so I really liked that. I loved how he took the ring apron off and tied up Apollo. He sort of tied his leg up into the ropes of the ring. And Michael Cole's like, Did he plan this? Did he set this up? Because I've been doing this for over 20 years and I've never seen the ring apron fall off that easily.
Yeah.
and just the dynamic, and actually something I talked to Michael Cole about later on in the show is the dynamic between Cole and Corey Graves. And because Cole was like, Sami Zayn beat the count. And then Corey Graves like, yeah, and he beat the odds. What a hero. You know, it's just a lovely dynamic between those two. Carmella attacked SmackDown Women's Champ Sasha Banks again. I was disappointed by this because Sasha came out, she started cutting a promo, and then for some reason Bayley came down, but then didn't do anything, and then Carmella ran in from behind and attacked Sasha. And I just remember thinking, it was a bit weird that Bayley was there. I sort of don't want to see Bayley and Sasha together for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that. I suppose that didn't really like occur to me, but I don't know. I want to see what this whole Carmella thing is about, I suppose. Because at the moment, like, we know how talented she is, but at the moment, it's another look at me with bleach blonde hair type character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's quite a few of them at the moment. And I want to see how she's different to Mandy, for example. Mandy and Dana and, you know.
Yeah.
Anyone who, or Lana. Anyone who's that, you know, the ravishing blonde type.
I think I want to, and slowly, you know, it's fine. I love a slow burn. I like things building up, but I definitely want to hear from her. And I want to hear a bit of purpose in her voice, and I want there to be a bit of substance and sort of backstory to this change and why she is like she is now. And I don't know. I said because the thing is, we've learned nothing new since we spoke about Carmella last week. And I remember saying to you, the thing is, I trust SmackDown to get it right. So yeah. I'm hoping it continues to build. Maybe there's something at Survivor Series. Obviously, Sasha is taking on Asuka, so I'm half expecting Carmella to be involved. But I want to hear her talk, and I want to hear her talk on a live mic, out in the ring in the Thunderdome, not in backstage vignettes.
Yeah.
This was an unbelievable moment on SmackDown. Rey Mysterio defeating Seth Rollins in a no-holds-barred match.
Oh, yeah.
The blow-off match to end the feud. Obviously, they had to wait a while because Mysterio was injured. But I loved this.
Yeah, it was awesome, wasn't it? And the whole story with the shaking the hand and, Murphy betraying Seth. Like the whole way it panned out, it was excellent.
It was just so well constructed. The story was told great. Lots of sort of smoke and mirrors, and the fact that Dominic and Aaliyah and Angie were on the outside, and Murphy was there, and you think he's going to help Seth beat Ray once and for all, but actually he turns on Seth and hits him with a wicked knee to the face.
Yeah.
Just what a moment, and what a sort of a virtual pop from the Thunderdome. But it was so well done. I wonder if it might have had more impact if we hadn't have had Murphy and Seth fighting for the last few weeks. You know,
yeah.
If it had come out of total shock. But then I guess if that was the case, Aaliyah and Murphy would never have got together, because if Murphy was completely aligned with Seth, then Aaliyah wouldn't go near him. So I sort of get the reason for that. But I mean, it was still a great moment. And I have to say, I teared up when Ray scaled the ropes and then looked up to the ceiling, and did the old arm shaky move that Eddie Guerrero used to do, and then hit the frog splash 15 years to the day that Eddie Guerrero passed away. It was like that, plus this sort of excitement and chaos of the last couple of minutes of the match, plus that turn from Murphy on Seth. I'd like the last 2 minutes of that match were just poetic, just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I clapped that moment as well. Like, it was a really, really nice tribute, and just a great ending. Yeah, I know what you mean about like with Murphy. Like, it wasn't completely unpredictable, but it doesn't have to be unpredictable all the time. You know, sometimes it can just go the way that we're hoping it's going to go. And I suppose the bigger shock, if they were going for shock, the bigger shock would have been Murphy was playing the Mysterios all along and aligning himself with Seth.
Yeah.
That would have been more of a shock than the sort of happy ending that we got. But I liked it. I loved that, like you said, that the whole package came together and got tied up at the end in a nice bow, in a really brilliant way. And I loved it. And surely we're going to get a bit of sort of Seth versus Murphy now.
Well, this is the thing. And the other brilliant bit about it was Seth backstage yelling and screaming, like absolutely mental off his head, yelling and screaming at Adam Pearce about wanting revenge on Murphy. And I mean, just those two, the idea of those two having some proper good matches, that can run and run really, you know, if they add layers to that story, you know, I mean, I'm imagining they're going to have a big pay-per-view match in December, maybe at TLC, because they could do some wicked stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to Murphy talking in an interview just recently, and he was saying like about this storyline, it's been wicked to do, and he's really loved it and it's been great for him, but he said he likes sort of how it's ending, but at the same time he doesn't want the story to end because he doesn't want to stop working with Seth yet.
Yeah,
because he said he was basically saying about Seth, like, the guy is so talented, and he said he's learned so much from him just by being in this program with him, and he wants to carry on working with him because he feels like he's developing. Because he said, I've got plenty of confidence in myself in terms of like in ring work. Like, he says, I feel like I'm a good wrestler, but in terms of like telling a story with your character and telling a story in the ring, so it's not just the moves and you know how to talk, and he says just the general storytelling of your character in and out of the ring, he said, I'm learning so much from working with Seth.
Yeah, well, it's not a surprise. Seth is genuinely one of the best in the world, really.
Yeah.
And and you can tell, I mean, Murphy, yeah, completely understand he would be confident as a wrestler because he is a superb in-ring performer. But on the mic, he doesn't yet have that confidence.
Mm. And he said that in the interview.
Yeah.
He actually said, you know, I'm not the best promo guy, but I'm learning so much from Seth and how to deliver things and how to use your body language and, you know, and that sort of stuff. It was really interesting.
Well, I mean, just talking about stories, the one thing also I wanted to mention from SmackDown was the video package that they played. It was a good like few minutes long, just detailing all the entire story between Seth, you know, going all the way back to earlier on in the year, sort of April, May time, and the Eye for an Eye match and everything. But everything, the way it all evolved over this whole year, and it just, I was watching it just thinking, man, this is one of the big highlights of the year. They've done so well.
For sure. And I think Ray's eye is okay now.
Oh, it's absolutely fine now.
Did you notice like that like bit that covers one of his eyes in his mask sort of was gone by the end of the match, and it was all fine.
Yes, I'm not a turnip. I noticed that too. Much like I like drinking Bovril, often with Midian, who was a bloody good bloke. The shenanigans that we're going to have forever on this show. Anyway, I'll stop being a nincompoop. Boom shakalaka, and we'll move on. God, what a dreadful idea that was. if I'd had the time to carefully weave in these words, so maybe like you didn't even notice I was doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, the way I do understand the execution is appalling, so apologies. Say again.
Need to spend some time with Seth so we can teach.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I need some help from the Messiah. Liv Morgan defeated Natalia, Tamina, and Chelsea Green in a fatal four-way Survivor Series qualifying match. Now, this one went very awry, and I was sort of really frustrated with the whole thing because Chelsea Green appeared, it sort of, you know, made her debut with absolutely no fanfare whatsoever. Suddenly she's plonked into a Survivor Series qualifying match. And then the poor girl breaks her bloody wrist when she's drop-kicked off the apron by Liv Morgan.
Yeah.
And then she's sort of on the outside, and then the finish is all wonky and Liv Morgan wins. The other question mark is, why was Natalia in the match? Because she was in a qualifying match last week and she lost.
Yeah.
So why is she in another one?
Yeah. I think they're sort of struggling for ideas for which girls to use.
It's so frustrating, isn't it, when nonsense like that happens.
But I did notice, because I heard that obviously sort of Chelsea sort of disappeared within the match. And then I heard that she had got, I'd heard before I saw that match that she'd got injured. And I didn't know that it was on SmackDown. I just assumed that this was on NXT. So when she, but I'd heard that she was injured. But then, so when she turned up on SmackDown, I was thinking, oh, right, this must be the match then. I was sort of aware of it, and I don't know if it's because of that, but there was a moment where, like, obviously she's gone down on the outside, and I thought that must be the moment. I think, yeah, when she got dropkicked to the outside.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who it was, but someone was going to, like, go in on her and keep beating her up. But Natty Neidhart was on the outside, and she dived in and stopped whoever it was from, like, kicking her.
Yeah, she did, didn't she?
The apron. And I just wonder if Nat, like, you know, she's such a pro, like,
she knew,
if she cottoned on immediately that Chelsea was hurt and intercepted, because Natalia was acting hurt, like, by the commentator's table.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she just snapped out of it and grabbed whoever it was that was about to stomp on her and banged them into the apron, and then it all moved away from Chelsea Green.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
I identified it and stepped in really quickly.
I mean, listen, Natalia's a pro, as you say. Yeah. She's an old veteran of the game, and you know, been saying it for months now since she appeared on GP earlier on in the year. But you know, I just wish she could. I really feel like she showed such life and such energy and piss and vinegar when she was in that program with Becky last year, and a short, you know, it was only lasted a few weeks. It was in the build up to SummerSlam in Toronto, and it made sense. And you just saw sparks of things with Natty. And I wish, it frustrates me when I see her in this position on SmackDown, where she's thrown into random matches when she's already lost an opportunity to be part of Survivor Series. But now she's getting another one. Just it almost lessens her character. You don't watch it and think, oh yeah, well, they're giving her another chance because she's Natty and she's a legend and all this stuff. You just think, why is she in this match? Doesn't make any sense. And then that takes away from her character, I think.
It's just like, you wonder what she could do if she was just put into a longer program where she was getting time to be on the mic and develop a storyline and develop a character, and, you know, like what she could do. Cause I worry that she's sort of becoming Ziggler, you know, like a real reliable talent in the ring to put other people over. Like, Ziggler is a jobber now, isn't he? Like on this show. Well, he's so unbelievably talented. Yeah. Ziggler. We talked about him so much, but like he got beaten on this show by Otis in no time at all. Yeah. Even though Bobby Roode was there trying to interfere and help him, he still just got smashed by Otis, like, in minutes.
Yeah. I think Natty is, and this is no disrespect to her, but I just think she's going through the motions, and that's only because that's all she's allowed to do, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a shame. Anyway, I'm going to play my interview with Michael Cole. We're talking this Sunday's Survivor Series on the WWE Network. A lot about The Undertaker, career highlights, working with Corey Graves, the chemistry there, commentary, Vince McMahon in his ear, and what that's really like. So here he is, the one and only Michael Cole on Gorilla Position. Michael Cole, voice of WWE. Absolute pleasure to have you on Gorilla Position.
I'm so glad to be here. You know, it's been a rough year for everyone. And one of the things that I do miss is traveling internationally with this company. And I'm just glad I get an opportunity to talk to you today and chat a little bit.
Yeah, well, I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time, so this is a genuine thrill for me. You must be excited about Survivor Series coming up this weekend. Or, in fact, do you still get excited by pay-per-views? You've been doing them for a long time now.
Almost 24 years, but pay-per-views, it's what we live for in the company. You know, you work Raw and SmackDown every week, 52 weeks a year, and, you know, the pay-per-view a lot of times is the beginning or the end of our major stories. And I love the opportunity to call pay-per-views games because we actually get to call extended wrestling matches. You know, as you know, watching Raw and SmackDown, you know, or an entertainment show, we have obviously deal with commercial breaks, and the matches not quite be as long as they normally are in a pay-per-view. And I love to be able to go out and call a good wrestling match, and that's what pay-per-view still provides.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait. And talking about Survivor Series, obviously the 30th anniversary to the day, as luck would have it, of The Undertaker's debut in 1990, the final farewell. Now, you, as you mentioned, nearly 24 years with the company, you're such a long-standing employee of WWE now. What has Taker meant to the locker room and also to you personally? Because I imagine you'd consider him a close friend after all these years.
When I started in the company in late 1996, early 97, I had come from the news world. And the only thing I knew about sports entertainment, WWE, is from, you know, what I watched on television as a fan. And Undertaker was one of those guys who I knew immediately when I came into the company. He was the leader. He was the locker room leader. He had the respect of everyone on the roster. And he was a guy that I talked to a lot about the business, and who helped me understand and learn the business. Of course, when I started here, I was a backstage interviewer. And some of my all-time classic interviews were done with Undertaker. We had a running bit where he would take my interview privileges away from whatever city I was in. So if I asked him a question in New York City, he would take my interview privileges away in New York City. And that was a long-standing gag that Undertaker and I had. But you know, he's someone who really epitomizes what WWE is all about, the loyalty to our product, to our brand, the leadership in the locker room, the respect that our superstars have for him, what he's able to teach younger superstars today, what he brings to the table from an experience standpoint, not to mention that he's probably the greatest in-ring performer of all time when you factor in everything from the way he works in the ring, to his classic entrance, to his amazing characters. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone at the level of Undertaker before or in the future.
And what's, if you could pinpoint a favorite match or a favorite night where you got to call one of Taker's matches, are there any particular nights that stick out for you?
Yeah, there's a number of them. I think for me, being a part of the historic moment at WrestleMania when Brock Lesnar defeated Undertaker was probably the one thing that stands out for a number of reasons. I mean, the WrestleMania streak, it's been talked about. It's legendary. It's even mythical. You know, no one before or since is ever going to have that success in our biggest show of our year. Undertaker was unbeatable. There was absolutely no way anyone was going to beat this man. And I think one of my all-time classic calls came when that match ended, because no one in the entire world thought that Brock Lesnar was going to beat Undertaker that night. And when he went into the cover, and I was expecting, like I think everyone else was, for Undertaker to kick out, and when he didn't, it was just a shock of, the streak is over. I mean, there was nothing else to say. You didn't have to scream it. You didn't have to yell. It wasn't this moment. It was a moment of complete and utter shock and disbelief. So that will always stand out. The other thing that I think about Undertaker is what he did for the career of Batista. If you go back and look at the trilogy of pay-per-view matches that he had with Batista, they were incredible. And that was the moment that Batista turned the corner, where people started to believe, oh my God, this guy actually is a really good in-ring performer. He's not just this muscled up guy who can't wrestle. And Undertaker, that rivalry and the trilogy of matches they had, to me, is some of the greatest work in the career of The Undertaker, and probably the favorite matches that were really called here in this company.
That's a really good shout. WrestleMania 23 in Detroit, I was there, and I remember thinking, wow, that match was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I think, and that's what Undertaker was so good at, was being able to, listen, he had great matches with some of the all-time greats in this business. I mean, when you put Undertaker and Shawn Michaels in the ring together, it was magic. Mm. Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve Austin, magic. But what Undertaker was able to do was he was able to take average superstars and turn them into major superstars because of what he did for them in the ring and the stories that would lead up and build up to where he was. I mean, all you got to do is take a look at Kane, for example. You know, Kane exploded on the scene at the Bad Blood pay-per-view in the first ever Hell in a Cell match, and he was forever linked to The Undertaker. So just think about what The Undertaker did for the career of Kane. Kane is now a Hall of Fame performer thanks to The Undertaker.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, I just want to talk about commentary because I think people don't understand what a hard job commentary is. Renee Young and myself were talking about it recently and just the complexities that people don't realize. And I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine it's one of those things where you can quite easily play a commentator, if you know what I mean by that. But rather than just committing to the moment and being yourself and letting that genuine excitement and emotion take over, would you say that commentary is something that you've mastered now after all these years?
I believe I've mastered it. I hope I have.
I think you have.
The problem is that this business is always evolving. And this business is always changing. And a couple of things that I've been very proud of in my career. Listen, am I the greatest wrestling announcer of all time? No way. I mean, there's many people that were better at calling wrestling matches than I am. However, the thing that I'm very proud of in my career is A, the ability to be able to work with anybody. I mean, I've had dozens and dozens of partners over the years, and I've been able to make them good and be able to help them, you know, move along in their career. The other thing is the longevity of doing this every week, 52 weeks a year. I mean, in 24 years, I've missed two television shows. One when my son got married, and another time when my wife had a kidney transplant. So since 1997, I've missed two television shows. That's 52 weeks a year, no weeks off, no vacations. So the longevity of it. But it's also adapting and evolving. This business in 24 years has changed drastically. And I'm a 54-year-old man. And to try to be able to keep up with the trends in society today and the use of social media and what the kids are doing at 20 years old, which is why I need a Corey Graves or a Byron Saxton, you know, in my announce booth, because they can keep me grounded and keep me updated with what the trends are. You know, I could still go out and call a wrestling match and tell a sports entertainment story, but I don't know what the 18-year-old kids are doing, so I need people to help me with that. And that's the one thing. I've been able to evolve, I think, over the years and just stay steady. And listen, I want to do this at least for a few more years. I'd love to make it to 25 years on the air in the company. I think that would be tremendous. You know, and I think it would be something that's never been done before. And I just think that this, I still have a love for what I do. And until that goes away, you're going to be stuck with me, for better or for worse.
Well, I'm very happy about that. Don't worry about that. But I wanted to talk to you about Corey Graves in particular, because you and him, the chemistry you have on SmackDown currently is fantastic. There's a real smoothness and a sense of, I guess, comfort that between the two of you. Is this just luck, or is this something that you have to work really hard on?
It's luck. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we sit down and practice and I've taught him things and so on and so forth. It's complete luck. Corey and I are really good friends. We hang out outside of the SmackDown booth. We have a lot of the same interests. We do a lot of things together. So that's one thing. And I think Corey is a once in a generation performer. You know, we've tried so many people over the years in those analyst roles, and there are dozens and dozens who tried it and who don't make it. And there are very few people that can accomplish this like Corey can. Corey is a natural. He has the instinct. He is a natural heel. He knows exactly how to protect heels. I know how to protect baby faces. The two-man booth works great. And I just think it's something that we stumbled upon, we got lucky with, and now I hope I'm going to work with Corey for the next decade because he's the best in the business.
Amazing. Yeah, I would love that. I absolutely love your partnership, so long may it last. And how is Vince McMahon with you on commentary? Do you get a lot of feedback in your ears during a live broadcast? Everyone's always so curious about that.
You know, it's so funny how this myth has taken on a life of its own over the past two decades. Listen, Vince runs the company. He's the boss. He's the chairman. He turned a small regional wrestling promotion into a multi-billion-dollar international conglomerate. it's his sandbox. He can do with it whatever he wants. Honestly, play-by-play guy, he gives me a lot of leeway. He allows me to do a lot of things because he believes in me after so many years. But he's the boss, and just like any producer of any television show, he's going to tell me what he wants. I may not agree with that direction a lot of the times, but I have to do it. He's my boss. Yes, he does. He's very active in your ears certain weeks. WrestleMania season, he is very, very active. but I've got a great relationship with Vince. He believes in me, or else I wouldn't have been here for as long as I have. I think a lot of that stuff with Vince screaming and yelling in your ear gets really blown out of proportion. I think there are some people that, you know, say that because they want to try to save face because they weren't successful in what they did. But hey, he's emotional just like all of us are when it comes to this product. He's so close to it. It's his family. It's in his blood, and he wants what he wants. And certain days, you know, you're going to draw the ire of the man. And other days, he's going to tell you that you're the greatest, you know, thing in the world. And that's just the way that Vince is. And I wouldn't trade my working with Vince and what he's meant to my family, my career, for anything.
Amazing. Is there a favorite night? We've talked about your favorite taker moments behind the commentary desk, but is there a particular night that sticks out for you? I remember hearing a feed of you during a commercial break once, and you were saying to the team backstage over comms and to your broadcast partner, I can't remember who it was sitting next to you, but you said, oh, I could watch these guys all day. And it was the SmackDown 6 talents. It was Eddie, it was Kurt and Edge and Chris and Ray and Chavo. I imagine you've really learned to love the art form of what WWE superstars do in the ring, especially with the best seat in the house?
I mean, there are so many, and I hate to single out any moments only because I don't want to pay any disrespect to all the people that I've had the pleasure of calling their matches over the years. I mean, I've talked about this a number of times, some of my favorite matches. You know, you go down the line when I was able to call, you know, Mick Foley, Mankind winning his first WWE championship. Eddie Guerrero winning the WWE title was one of my favorite moments. Eddie and I were really, really close. You know, like I said before, Undertaker at WrestleMania, Seth Rollins cashing in the Money the Bank contract at WrestleMania, which to me is still probably my favorite call of all time. There's been so many moments over the years. I'm just glad that these people, these superstars, men and women over the years, have allowed me to become the soundtrack to the matches that they put together. Those are the guys who sell the tickets. And that's why people watch this product, not to hear Michael Cole go on and on and on. But I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to be the soundtrack to many of these guys' careers and some of their favorite moments. Because to me, that's what it means. And probably the biggest highlight of my career was the night that Shawn Michaels retired in the ring on Monday Night Raw, and he singled me out and thanked me for what I had done for his career. And to have a guy like Shawn Michaels do that, that's the icing on the cake. That's why we do this, to have those guys recognize the time and the work and the effort that we put in to help them become the best they can be.
Adding salt and pepper to the steak, as JR would say. Very quickly, I just wanted to ask you about this year. Such a tough year for so many, obviously. A very topsy-turvy time for WWE. Thinking about way back earlier on in the year, you and Triple H's comedy double act on that first SmackDown from the PC, the empty PC. But what have been your highlights when you reflect on this very, very strange year?
That was such a surreal moment. you know, one week we were doing SmackDown in front of a capacity crowd. The next week we were in an empty arena that no one had any idea how we were going to pull it off. From the performers to the backstage personnel to me as a commentator, how are we going to do this? How are we going to tell stories without the audience? The audience is such an integral and important part of our product. And, you know, when I was doing that show with Triple H, it was just supposed to be me by myself. Corey couldn't get in. It was going to be me alone. Hunter did the first segment, and then Stephanie texted him, his wife, during the break. He said, oh, my God, you guys sound great together. Why don't you stay out there? So Hunter stayed out there for the entire show, and it became one of the highlights of this entire strange, weird year. I think the pandemic, you know, I think it opened our eyes to a lot of different things. We had to become innovative. That's why you saw the WWE Thunderdome, which is an unbelievable facility put together. I think people like Bayley, Sasha Banks, their careers skyrocketed during the pandemic because they were able to be themselves and they were able to have a conversation. You could hear that conversation and they developed a relationship with me on commentary. And it's a really strange, very trying year, but I think that we've done the best that we can. And I'll tell you, I don't see any other company in the entire world being able to pull off what we've done during this really strange 2020.
I completely agree. Well, Michael Cole, it's been an absolute pleasure. So lovely to finally chat to you and have an amazing weekend in the Thunderdome. I'm sure you will.
I can't wait. Thank you so much, James. I appreciate it.
Cheers, Michael.
You're listening to the number one WWE podcast. It's Gorilla Position.
Welcome back to Gorilla Position, the show that takes you closer to the action and adventure of WWE. My name's James D'Lo, along with Mr. Kevin Clifton.
Yo, yo, yo.
And you are listening to the Raw theme tune. We're about to break down all the action from this past week's Drew McIntyre show. Let's call it that.
Yeah.
Big thank you to Michael Cole. Hope you enjoyed that interview. The line wasn't great. He was calling from Orlando, but really, really appreciate his time. Great to have such a ledge on the show this week. So let's talk Monday Night Raw. Drew McIntyre, he comes out, gives a promo. He's giving thanks because, you know, approaching Thanksgiving. He's giving thanks to his family and his friends, but also the doubters. And he tells Randy that he's going to claymore his head off his shoulders in the main event. This was, I thought, one of Drew's better promos. Great confidence, some nice lines, full of piss and vinegar. I've said that twice on the show now. But I thought it was really good. Drew is to me, it feels like he's just improving every single week.
Correct.
Because that's not annoying already. So before we get to Miz, Randy comes out. Oh, sorry, he doesn't come out. He appears on the Titantron.
Yeah.
And this again was little sparks of Drew versus Randy in the summer, because there was just a bit of realness to it. And he was saying, yeah, I'm a legend. I'm still here after having more suspensions and more fines than anyone else in the company. I've probably spent more time on my couch suspended than most of the current roster have spent in that ring.
Yeah, it's probably true.
And he said, I've become the best wrestler ever. And you know, I really liked it. Just really liked this whole segment.
Yeah, it was great. I did think though, did you not clock that? Like, you know, he went into like a little bit of a list on that moment where he started to go like, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the legend killer, I'm the, you know, the list when he does that. And he was going, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that, I'm great, I'm brilliant, I'm ace. You know, in his own words. And it was building too. Obviously, the tagline of Survivor Series is the best of the best. Mm. And so you knew that that's where he was going to go with it at the end. And he went, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the dumb, I'm the best. And then he hesitated and went, and then he had to finish with, and that is because I am the greatest wrestler ever. And I'm sure he was meant to go, I'm the this and I'm that and I'm the greatest, and that is because I am the best of the best, because that's what everyone says because of Survivor Series. But he said best too early.
I love the little things you notice.
Because he hesitated after he said it, and I could see his brain going, oh god, I've gone and said best.
I've gone, oh damn.
Oh damn it.
Maybe, I mean, it may, he should have said Chumbawamba or Slobber Knocker or, you know, Cascades.
Well, yeah, speaking of lists, yeah.
You know, Kumquat.
Yeah.
Anyway, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Yowie, wowie. Chicanery. That's a good word.
Mm.
That's a good word.
Someone said the Vegas thing there because of AEW, haven't they?
Yeah, probably.
That's an AEW thing, yeah.
So the Miz comes down. He gloats about change coming, you know, holding the briefcase. And then, I mean, let's talk about the Miz and let's talk about the Fiend. Because there was a Firefly Funhouse, Bray and Alexa loved it as always. Really, really good. Really, really good. And he challenges the Miz to a match tonight. And they do this little sort of spelling bee skit. And Alexa's like, how do you spell jackass? And the Fiend's like, M-I-Z. But then they have the match. And I really wanted to talk about Miz versus Bray. It's really good because it keeps Miz in the conversation of sort of main event and I guess threat to the title and holding the Money in the Bank briefcase and things like that. But this whole few segments around this match featured perhaps my favorite moment of Raw. Alexa came out first. Nikki Cross then comes out and tries to persuade her that Bray is no good for her. The kind of thing she's been doing for the last couple of weeks. Alexa then slaps Nikki and they get into a really cool pull apart brawl on the entranceway. And then Bray's Firefly Funhouse theme hits and the change of expression on Alexa's face. She goes from like fight mode and anger to this huge smile and this big laughter just in that moment, as soon as the music hits and Bray walks out. And it was wonderful. And then Bray comes out, excuse me. And just having Alexa and Nikki and all the officials that were out there to pull Nikki and Alexa apart, plus the Miz and Morrison watching on from the ring. It just made Bray look like the biggest megastar for the company, like just the puppet master and just this unspeakable effect that he'd had on all those people. It was just such good stuff. It was so perfectly executed, I thought.
Yeah, like everything you just said, is a superstar, and so is Alexa. And like I just wrote, like, I love the Firefly Funhouse. Every time he's coming on, like I take notice, and it feels exciting every time them two are coming on. They're so, and that's why I think, like, say when we're talking about The Undertaker, like if The Undertaker was to do something, I feel like The Fiend would be perfect for it.
I mean, just imagine Alexa as in part of a program with The Undertaker. It would be, it would be so special. And it's weird. I almost prefer Bray out there rather than The Fiend. And I think if we see The Fiend less and less, and we just see him teased in little videos and little flashes of him, I think they've got to keep his appearances to a minimum, because I think keep it special. And what's developing really nicely at the moment is Bray, is Firefly Funhouse Bray, and that connection he's got to Alexa. It's brilliant. And Bray's match with Miz was really good. Alexa was outside the ring, and at one point when Morrison tried to get involved in the match, Alexa runs, dives off the ring steps onto Morrison, sending them both careering over the barricade into the front row. It was just, and then after the match, after Bray, you know, obviously won, Alexa then walked gleefully along the barricade after the match to join Bray hand in hand. Just phenomenal, honestly. I can't put my finger on why this is so good, and I think that's what makes it so good.
Yeah, it's just total belief in the character and total commitment to the character. And it's like that jump on Morrison that you're talking about was phenomenal.
It was so good.
It was even the way that she did it. Like she didn't sort of somersault into him or clothesline him or slap him or any of that. She just jumped on him like a little girl jumping onto her dad.
It was childlike.
Childlike, jumped onto him like and just sent him like backwards over this thing. It was like, oh my God. And it came so out of nowhere as well. She just came screaming on, you know, like from the edge of the screen. It looked brilliant. And it was the way she sort of, after Bray had won, and the music hits, and Bray looked slightly worried, like looking for her, like where is she? And then she slowly rose from behind the barrier, with this big smile on her face, and it was just like, oh, this is ace.
It was so well done. Everything was so, I just feel like they're really taking care with it. And that's so often what we say with Raw. Yeah, it's a long show, all that stuff. You know, the third hour is creative, you know, it's a disaster creatively and all those things. But we always say that it just feels like the creative team just don't care about a lot of the stuff, and they're not sort of paying attention to the smaller moments that really matter. Whereas I think everything to do with Alexa and Bray is being handled and taken care of really well.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're just thinking about it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a much better Raw this week.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. There was a lot of good things happening. We'll talk more about Drew in a minute and the big title win. There was more Survivor Series gumph. I mean, you talk about, you know, taking care over the product and what happens on the show. You had Lana requesting. So we find out that Lana has requested to team up with Nia and Shayna.
Yeah.
And they sort of explained it away by, you know, Lana was saying it's inspiration from Randy Orton last week, teaming up with Miz and Morrison. But come on, Nia has put her through a table 8 weeks on the trot.
Yeah.
Why would she? It's like her going, now I want to team with you to prove that I can, you know, I'm a valid member of the Survivor Series team. It's like, you've tried to destroy me for 2 months.
But also, like, at this point in the night, Mandy and Dana were still part of Team Raw as well. And so she like, wanted to take on them, right? It was them two and Asuka, right? Mm. Yeah, it was them two and Asuka against Nia, Shayna, and Lana. So she wanted to fight the other members of the team that she's joined. And this is that thing, again, that I was saying before. It's like, you know, they're supposed to be wanting to beat SmackDown, but they're just sort of all fighting each other. And I thought Corey Graves did the line of the night when he said, when Shayna does that stomp on the elbow, was it to Mandy or Dana? She did it to one of them on the steps. You know, that one that looks really nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. At that point, Corey Graves went, does anyone care about the health of Team Raw at this point? And I thought, no, you're right, Corey. You're right. Men and women.
Yeah, exactly.
No one cares about the health of the team.
it annoyed me because, none of it really made sense. And you had those three taking on Dana Brooke, Mandy Rose, and Asuka. Asuka, who makes Lana tap out with the Asuka lock. Nia then, she keeps the streak alive 9 weeks in a row. But she pretends she's not going to put Lana through a table. And then she says, psych, loser.
Yeah.
And then,
No.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
Atrocious.
It's like, if she'd have just done it, like, and just been sort of, she's just fierce, do you know what I mean? Like, that she just makes out that she's not going to, and then she just does.
Yeah.
Like, Steve Austin celebrating with a couple of Steve Weisers in the middle of the ring with someone, you know what's coming. You know that guy's going to get stunned, but he's not going to look at him and go, loser, and then do it.
Oh, Nia needs to get a personality and quick. And I don't mean that in a horrible way, but like, I've always said this about her. I don't know who she is. Mm. Like, like, I don't think she talks like that in real life. I don't think she walks around going, psych. I mean, who said, when was the last time anyone ever said the word psych?
I know. Yeah.
It's just, it beggars belief.
Yeah.
It really does.
There was another moment later on with it. Once she backstage and she said some line that had clearly been written where she went like, that was the worst idea since, and what was it she said? Like, worst idea since Quibi or something.
Yeah, it's just,
I don't know what Quibi is, but
it's a content platform that went bust this year, and I think even they'd commissioned shows from WWE, and then the whole thing fell apart. And it was meant to be this sort of new Netflix on mobile phones or whatever. Yeah. And it all just was. So that was WWE just feeding Nia a line to have a little dig at Quibi. Mm. But it's just, I hate stuff like that because there's absolutely no way Nia would ever say that.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. It's on one hand, she's sort of fierce Nia Jax, who's putting Lana through a table 9 weeks in a row, and she's teaming with Shayna, and they're the tag champs, and she's, you know, don't mess with her.
Mm.
And on the other hand, when it's backstage, it just feels so mean girls. Like, oh my God, like, why would you, like, do that? Like, you know, like, this is, like, the worst idea since Quibi.
Yeah, it's dreadful.
It just sounds silly.
It's, you know, one moment she's being hellacious, another moment it's just shenanigans, you know, an onomatopoeia. I can't remember what onomatopoeia means. Can you remember?
Is it when, look, it's either like when the word sounds like the thing that you're saying, or it's when you're using the same start of the letter all the time, or
the formation of a word from a sound associated with what is named.
There you go.
Example: sizzle. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so it sounds like the word. Yeah.
Bounce back ability.
Right.
Bum fuzzle. Rambunctious. Erroneous. Snaffle. Floggle.
No one said retribution.
No one has said retribution, no, nor should they. Flogglehorn, slobber knocker, nuances. Oh, a little dig from Richard Williams there. Gusset, discombobulated boogie. What else we got here? Ramekins, that's quite a nice word. Roadhouse, yeah. Moist, arsenal. Sebastian, so many. Sebastian, it's a good word. Anyway, I might twerp.
Okay.
New Day beat Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin from Hurt Business in a wonderful match.
Yeah.
Stunning chemistry between these four.
Yeah. What about that bit when Cedric went for the suicide dive out the ring, completely missed him and just went smashing into the barrier and then just did it again. He went, right, I missed him there, smashed into the barrier. I'm going to do it again and do the same thing again. Yeah. And he just kept running back into the ring, diving out, smacking into the barrier.
It was really good. It was one of the... I'll tell you what, there's been a few matches this week, and we'll talk about NXT in a moment, but you know, Rhea Ripley, Io Shirai. And then Seth Rollins, Ray on Smackers. And then on Raw, we had New Day versus Hurt Business. Three matches there, just off the top of my head, that just made me think, God, I love wrestling.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just like really, really good quality matches, strong stories. You care about who wins. You care about who loses. Just good. I love wrestling.
Yeah, me too. And this is the thing as well, like, you know, when people get into that sort of, you know, it's very black and white and very tribal when it comes to sort of WWE versus, you know, or even Raw and SmackDown versus NXT or WWE versus AEW. And it has to be black or white. And one does this and one does that. And like, I just don't subscribe to that view, because like, you look at WWE and like, some people say, oh yeah, but that's sports entertainment land, that's not proper wrestling. And then I see matches like this and go, I'm afraid that is wrestling. It's really good wrestling.
It makes me moist, Kev. Have I said moist?
You've said moist twice, which leads me to believe that maybe you are a bit moist.
Becky's Deadlies, I know her very well on Twitter. She was there at GP Live. You are welcome for, you know, saying moist. Yeah, I've said it again four times. Horrendous. My wife hates the word moist. That is a fact.
Did she?
Yeah, absolutely hates it. So, let's talk very quickly about Retribution. They get sort of destroyed by the Raw Survivor Series teams. This is a sort of like, can the Survivor Series Raw team work together? They team up. They take on Retribution in a sort of fun but fairly depressing match. And you got Captain AJ on commentary, whilst Riddle, Braun, Sheamus, and Keith Lee just sort of squabble for no reason. Just to add some jeopardy, I guess, into the Survivor Series match that no one really cares about. But during a scuffle, Retribution score a surprise victory. But therein lies the problem for me. Therein lies the issue. The fact that it was a surprise victory and they were ruined for most of the match.
Yeah.
Ball well and truly dropped on Retribution. I think we can all agree it has been a colossal waste of everyone's time.
And they only won, like you say, it was a surprise win. They only won because Team Raw were falling out.
Yeah, like, yeah, you can only beat us because we're not getting along. Like, how threatening a Retribution? Not threatening at all.
They're the job squad now.
Yeah, it's just so annoying.
It's them and, like, over on AEW, that they've got the Dark Order. It's the same thing for me. They're just a job squad that was built up to be this dark thing that's, you know, this faction that is, we're here to destroy and we're going to take over the whole company and we're just getting started and all of this sort of big dangerous faction, and they're just largely a job squad.
Yeah.
The Dark Order on AEW and Retribution in WWE, it's they're not threatening. And I don't like, we talked about this last week where Mustafa Ali was so good in his interviews, but in the promos it's different. And they did another promo this week and I just thought, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
I don't believe what you're saying. This actually doesn't match up with anything you were saying in your interview.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. And I can't for the life of me understand why, like, if there's one pay-per-view which seems perfect for Retribution, it's Survivor Series. Teams, like Survivor Series traditionally was teams going up against each other. It was set up beautifully for, you know, I mean, we said it a while back, it should have really have been this big build towards Retribution versus Hurt Business.
Yeah.
And Retribution should probably have been going over, like, you know, but now, like, I mean, do they, are they on Survivor Series? Are they going to be there?
Well, I mean, they might make an appearance, but no, they're not on the show.
They're not on the card, are they?
No.
And that sort of makes sense as well, because they don't really beat anyone unless there's some shenanigans.
Yeah. Very, very annoying. Yeah, hugely annoying. Back to the positive stuff that we liked. Sheamus and Drew backstage, this is carrying on. This friendship. Sheamus gives Drew, I mean, it was a bit hammy. Let's be honest. It was a bit, like, it was sort of acted well. Drew wasn't, you know, he just commits to everything. So kudos to Drew.
That's the point. That's the point, James. Like, it doesn't matter how hammy it is. Like, wrestling on the whole, of course, is hammy in a lot of things. Like, it's meant to be over the top. That's why we love it. You know, it's not UFC. It's wrestling. It's pro wrestling. And we love the over the top characters. You know, the Rock could be ridiculously hammy at times, but still brilliant. But it's the commitment to it. It's the commitment to the character and just believe in the character. And you can do anything. Like, I agree, this was hammy, but I loved it. I love seeing Drew and Sheamus together on screen and the giving of the sword and all of that, which then led into Drew coming out in his kilt and the sword. I was just like, this is excellent. Like, I was properly popping for Drew when he came out in his kilt and sword. It was over the top and ridiculous and brilliant.
It was. I agree. And as we said earlier, Raw was the Drew show. It was the 3 hours of TV plus the segments he had on SmackDown with Roman and Jay and the match with Jay at the end of the night. It was all built to Drew becoming world champion again. This feels like a creative a slightly sudden creative change, but ultimately it was the right decision, because I think everyone's more excited about Drew versus Roman at Survivor Series, and I think Drew is just on fire now.
He's on fire.
Like, and also the amazing video package on Drew versus Randy followed this segment with Sheamus. And again, as it was a standout moment for me on the entire show. Drew is coming across as a real main event star now. And that may sound like an obvious thing to say, but it's one thing being a world champ, and it's another thing entirely actually being a true superstar for the company. And that is what I think he's becoming. So many people are champions, but they're never really actually quite at the top of the card. They never take it to that next level. They never, you know, you get your megastars, and I do feel that Drew is becoming that. And I know we've talked a lot about this feud with Randy essentially running out of story, you know, about a month ago. But generally, overall, I think this feud must be looked back at as a huge success. Like, I watched this video package and I just thought, I've really enjoyed this. They've told a good story here.
And you know what? I think the actual switching of the titles onto Randy and then back to Drew, I actually think was a good decision. They did it at the right time, because we were talking about Hell in a Cell, about it just being like, as much as we love watching them, it has just run its course a little bit, and it's like, what left is there to do with this?
Yeah.
And I was saying, unfortunately, now someone's going to come out of it. If this is the end of the program, someone's going to come out of it looking weaker now, because like, if they just take the title off Drew, then it's like, oh, he's gone through so much, but then they've taken the title off him now, it's done.
Mm.
Whereas if Randy loses, he's just lost three in a row. Yeah. And it lost all of his momentum. So what they did, they had Randy, I think we even said, like, the only way that this becomes interesting at Hell in a Cell is if Randy wins the title.
Yeah.
But then it's really unfortunate and kind of kills momentum for Drew. So the fact that they did have Randy win the title made it interesting. And now at this point, they've switched it back to Drew so they can keep his momentum going. I actually think is perfect.
Do you know what? Maybe it was the plan all along. Maybe it was. And also, not only do we get that little sort of, I don't want to say push because he doesn't need it, but, you know, that momentum behind Randy because he had a big title victory in a big high profile match with, you know, a big old stunt at the end, which will be on the highlight reels for years to come. But also we've now seen Drew in hunt mode, you know, in not just defending his title mode, but actually hunting the title down again. And that adds, that just little twist adds a nice dynamic to the character. So I think it's good. And the main event of the show was great. Carrying the sword of his ancestors, he came out kilt and all. Just everything on the show is building to this big victory, as you said earlier, making Drew a bigger star than he was before. Really good main event. Adam Pearce comes out and stops Randy Orton from leaving. He tried to hightail it out of there up the entranceway. And then Pearce made it an ODQ match. There must be a winner. Randy was bleeding from the back after he went through a table at ringside. It was just really a solid match and a big victory, and overall an exciting episode of Raw.
Yeah, it was really much better than it has been recently.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Okay, well, congratulations to Drew. Quick prediction before we just quickly talk about NXT. So Sunday night, Drew versus Roman. Who have you got?
I can't wait for this match now. The thing is, I'm so into Drew now. Like, I'm so behind him as my babyface champ. Like, I've become such a Drew mark.
Yeah. So I
just think the way it's going to work out is that, like, I'm genuinely, as a Mark fan, going to go into Survivor Series begging for Drew to beat Roman, but he's not going to, and it's going to make me hate Roman even more. Like, and I feel like that's probably the way it should be. Now, I don't know if there's going to be, you know, some sort of messy finish to make it happen that's going to give us Drew's next opponent on Raw, you know, yep, Drew's next challenger. So it's not just a clean win. But I just can't see why Roman would lose at the moment. Do you know what I mean? It's like Randy's a fighter and he's a baby face and he can get beaten, but he can get back up again. It's that.
Yeah.
Roman surely can't be beaten at the moment.
I think I agree. I think Roman has to win. I'm sort of torn because I'm with you. I love Drew. I love the momentum behind him, but I don't want anything, not anything, to be taken away. Like, I almost didn't even like the fact that Jey Uso lost on SmackDown, because I want his moment. I want everything to do with Tribal Chief and Head of the Table and that, you know, that story. I want that to keep as much momentum up as we go through the months. I don't want anything to be taken away from Roman. My prediction is Randy Orton comes down, payback for, you know, on Drew. He tries to get involved when the referee's down or something, but then Edge makes an appearance.
Yeah.
And takes out Randy. He takes him out of the equation. They brawl to the back or something.
Yeah.
Then maybe you're going to see Roman cheating.
Yeah, low blow.
Low blow something. But then before the pinfall, Sheamus comes out and we think he's going to try and make the ref see sense and try and tell the ref what Roman had done. But then Sheamus turns on Drew, allowing Roman to pick up the victory. So then you set up Drew versus Sheamus for the title. And I think a big match between those two in December, I think fits. And I think that they would have a great match at TLC. Yeah. It keeps Roman strong and you set up Randy and Edge.
I mean, great.
That's what
that'd be awesome.
That's what I think. Should we talk very, very briefly about NXT?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We've only got 10 minutes left. So let's rattle through this. But another good NXT show on Wednesday, North American champion Leon Ruff defeats Johnny Gargano by DQ. When Damian Priest comes in, he pulls out Leon when he's about to lose the match, and then he says, "Sorry, kid," and punches him, which obviously causes the DQ, and Gargano loses, and Leon keeps the championship. I quite like this.
Yeah. Am I starting to love Leon Ruff a little bit?
I mean, he was flying around in the ring.
Bloody amazing.
It was excellent.
That sort of springboard off of three different ropes thing that he does. He goes from one rope to the next rope to another rope, like sort of across the corner.
Yeah.
It was so good. He's so athletic, but also so like he understands his character. And yeah, I really enjoyed Leon Ruff. And I'm really enjoying just the story that makes sense, the story, like that they would behave like that. Johnny Gargano is how he is. Priest could see he was going to lose the match, and he really just wanted to get a Gargano still, so he did what he did. Mm. That meant that Gargano couldn't get the title. But then it's kind of cool that Leon Ruff was pissed off at that. He was like, "Oh right, I'm just a joke to you, am I?" Mm. Like, you know, and wanted to get involved. So now we've got a nice little sort of three-way going on.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. And I like any opportunity for a young talent like that to be given the rub of someone like Gargano and just be mixing it up with those talents, I think is fun.
Yeah.
It is fun. Dexter Lumis, talking of fun, this is sort of fun, but I don't know if I'm a bit over it now. Dexter Lumis and Cameron Grimes fought to a no contest in a blindfold match. So Cameron Grimes basically swings and hits the referee, is kicking the referee thinking it's Dexter. Yeah. He takes his blindfold off, realized Dexter still stood there, and then Dexter essentially just chases him out of the Capitol Wrestling Center. It's sort of, I don't know, when I see kind of comedy like this, sometimes in NXT, as we talked about before a lot, they do it really, really well. I don't know if this is a bit silly for me. I don't know what you think.
I found the first minute or two when sort of Grimes was throwing himself around was funny.
Yeah.
And I kind of knew that that's what they were going to do. Grimes was going to be all over the place. Dexter Lumis was going to stand still and just move out the way with one step each time. You know, I sort of felt like that's what was going to happen. But then it quickly, like, the blindfolds came off and then Grimes just ran away. And I just sort of found it a bit awkward.
Yeah.
I was like, what? So that was that then. Mm. He just ran away from a match then.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much further they can take this, really, after their House of Horrors match or whatever it was called, Halloween Havoc. It's all, I think I was so excited about Dexter Lumis you know, I think Cameron Grimes is a great talent, but I want to see a more serious side of Dexter. I think he could be in the main event scene, really. Yeah.
But it's his strangeness that's interesting. We don't need too much comedy, I think.
Yeah, exactly. When they're pushing the comedy too much, he becomes a lot less eerie And
yeah,
you know, and that's a bit of a shame. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell defeated Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. And there were two women's tag team matches. The other match was Toni Storm and Ember Moon, who I thought were brilliant together, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
They defeated Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. And then Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell attacked Storm and Ember Moon afterwards. They assaulted them, dumped them back in the ring, allowing Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez to sort of, you know, pick the bones and leave them both lying. So that was quite good. I enjoyed, there was a lot of women's action on the show.
Yeah, great. I mean, they've got the best sort of women's roster out of any of the companies, haven't they?
Yeah.
But on the whole, great stuff.
But it's funny. I think I said to you last week, I'm particularly excited about Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. Yeah, there's something about that partnership I really, really enjoy. But seeing Toni Storm and Ember Moon in the ring together, they've got some good chemistry, those two.
Yeah, yeah, that was good. I wasn't quite as fussed on the backstage promo, you know, just with Ember talking. Again, I was slightly like, oh, I'm not sure, but brilliant in the ring.
Well, it's this thing, isn't it? And we talked about it with old, what's his chops? Murphy, you know, like Ember is, I watch her in the ring and I'm thinking, you're so smooth.
Yeah, great.
Like so good, like impactful and just banging in the ring. But when it comes to promos, less so. It's like that big return promo she did. It just wasn't strong enough. So, I think there's definite improvements to be made. But, I mean, she's a great talent. She's a really good talent. Timothy Thatcher defeated enhancement talent August Gray, making him tap out with a standing guillotine.
Mad.
And then Ciampa, I mean, I'm loving Timothy Thatcher, but then Ciampa coming out post-match was exciting to me because I thought these two in the ring, hello you.
Yeah, both nasty.
yeah, exactly. Gnarly and nasty. And Thatcher, he sort of took it as his cue to exit and insisted he had no problem with Ciampa and walked out. I'd be excited to see those two mix it up.
Yeah, that was an excellent heelish thing to do, that, actually, with Thatcher. Like, just, he's playing that card of, like, he's such a bully, and obviously his character is that he teaches these wrestling students, but he bullies them in the lessons, and just, you know, just to show how tough he is.
Yeah.
And we don't like him for that. But as soon as Ciampa got in the ring, he was sort of scarpering away, going, I've got no problem with you. It was like that cowardly heel thing to do. Like, he acts all tough and nasty, but at the same time, you know, he couldn't just stand up to Ciampa. Like, I thought that was pretty, like, classic wrestling stuff, that.
It was good, yeah. Wrestling 101.
Yeah.
NXT Women's Champion Io Shirai defeated Rhea Ripley. I touched on this briefly earlier, but I watched. This was sort of a bit epic, really. I was expecting good things, but it was a battle. And, you know, Rhea Ripley, I think, did her earring get ripped out? So she had blood all over her ear.
Yeah.
There was a power bomb. It was like sunset flip turned into a power bomb through the table on the outside. Io doing that to the much larger Ripley. I loved it. As I said earlier, I watched this match. I was like, man, I love this stuff. Like when it's done well and something is clicking. Do you know what I mean? It's just it doesn't always happen, of course, even if you get two incredible talents in the ring, they don't always click. But these two clicked and just created a bit of wrestling magic. If anyone hasn't watched it, they should.
I adore these two. I love every time they're in the ring.
So good.
Yeah, just brilliant stuff. And do you think that now after this, and that they didn't put the title on Rhea Ripley as well, and it sort of came out of nowhere, this title match.
It did, didn't it?
Sort of like, oh, let's do the title match, but Io Shirai is still going to go over. This just screams to me like we're going to see Rhea Ripley on Raw or SmackDown joining one of the women's teams next week. Like on Friday, maybe she's turning up on SmackDown.
What do you think?
Well, I just think, I don't know. I thought it was weird to not have some sort of massive storyline build up to this, because Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley for the women's title is sort of as big as it gets in the women's division in NXT.
Yeah.
And it came out of nowhere just to have Ripley lose. Like, I just feel like, okay, they've got something different planned for Ripley now. They wanted to have this big last match, and they probably wanted to do it, the two of them as well.
Yeah.
Because there was so much respect between them at the end. I just feel like, okay, that's it. We're going to see Rhea Ripley turn up on maybe on SmackDown or something, or she's going to turn up at Survivor Series or something, you know, and she's heading to Raw or SmackDown.
Okay. Well, that, that very much could happen. Very much could happen. That's exciting. I hadn't thought about that. And then, if all that wasn't enough, we had...
The show has arrived!
So we had NXT champ Finn Balor returning to address his status after his broken jaw. He's talking about... I mean, he's still puffed up, isn't he? He's still swollen as hell. Three plates in his mouth. He talked about defending the title with a broken jaw in two places. But then McAfee, the main event, arrives. McAfee, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, and they circled the ring. McAfee cut a great promo, and he said, lots of has happened here since you've been away sipping steak through a straw. he did a great a statement, you know, standing up to Finn Balor saying, you're the champ, you don't mean anything. This is our world now. We're running the joint. We're running the show from top to bottom. And I thought it was great. And they sort of circled the ring, and then Undisputed Era returned united, and an all out brawl took us off the air with, and I don't know if you've seen the .com exclusive, but William Regal then comes out. And you know he's going to say it. He just walks down the aisle as everyone's brawling, and they stop brawling and they look at him, and he holds the mic up to his mouth, and the fans are going mad, and Adam Cole is going, say it, just say it, say it. And then he goes, War Games.
Yeah.
It was just, it was so good.
So exciting. It's really exciting that. And Pat McAfee is in the conversation for best promo in the business right now in the world.
Completely agree.
It's him and MJF, I think.
Yeah, good shout.
You know, like, I was trying to think, who's the top five promos in wrestling right now? I was trying to think of like that list. Maybe the listeners can say what they think. But like, McAfee is definitely in that top five.
Yeah. In the current landscape, I think he's definitely up. I mean, he's got more work to do. He's, you know, it's a bold statement saying he's one of the best, but he's got that something. And you look at him and you know that he could be up there, certainly.
Yeah.
But War Games is going to happen at NXT TakeOver on December 6th from the PC, the Capital Wrestling Center. So we've got Team Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Tony Storm, and to be determined, versus Team Candice, Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell, Dakota Kai, and Raquel Gonzalez. And then we've got another War Games match, Undisputed Era versus the Kings of NXT, McAfee, Dunne, Burch, Lorcan. Oh!
Is that what they're calling themselves? The Kings of NXT?
I think they are, aren't they? Yeah.
Brilliant.
But yeah, it's exciting. I mean, because usually War Games would be a Survivor Series weekend thing, but it's happening on December 6th.
Yeah.
But lots of exciting stuff. Very, very quick mention before we go. NXT UK.
Yeah.
The NXT UK Heritage Cup final is set for next week. A-Kid versus Trent Seven. Because Trent Seven defeated Mastiff last week. I'm excited by this one. An unexpected final.
Yeah, I loved how in the Mastiff versus Trent Seven match, they played on the knockout punch thing, because we weren't sure whether Mastiff had actually knocked out his opponent in the round before with a big right hand, and the match just sort of stopped. So they played on that during the match, that he'd done the same to Trent Seven, and then he carried on, and it was like this big bruising match, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the final of this.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. I feel like I haven't been keeping up as much as I have wanted to over the last couple of weeks, but I think next week, the final of the Heritage Cup is when I'm going to try, and things should be less busy for me next week. So I'm going to try and get my head right back into that. So we'll talk about that next week. Yeah. Cool. And then I just want to make very quick mention of Rampage Brown. So yes. He is on NXT UK. Bit, you know, Rev Pro, Progress, big name on the indie scene in the UK, Insane Championship Wrestling. He's been there for years, I think, since like mid-teens, 2000. Right. What do you call him?
The mid-tens.
Yeah. Anyway, he's been there for, I think, 6 or 7 years, and done stuff in the US as well. And I remember actually seeing it. I triggered my memory. I saw him live at a World of Sport taping in Norwich, I think it was. Was it Norwich? Yes, it was. I was down there with Stu Bennett, and Rampage Brown was on the card. But an exciting signing to have him on NXT UK.
Yeah, and like I'm sort of not as up on, you know, in terms of my knowledge of like the indie scenes and stuff, but I learned all I needed to know from that one moment where he was backstage. This was on last week's NXT, because I'm watching this week's tonight. But on last week's NXT, he came backstage, and I think it was Mastiff that was there back. It was sort of someone like that was back there and saw him, and they sort of fist bumped, and he just went, "It's about time." and that told me all I needed to know about him. For him to arrive.
Very, very good talent. I'm excited to see what he'll do in NXT UK. Okay, got to wrap it up there. But Kev, thanks so much for being part of this week's show. You going to watch Survivor Series live on Sunday?
Yeah, I will, actually.
Yeah, you bloody will. Taker's 30th anniversary.
Yeah, can't miss it. I don't want to see things on Twitter the next day before I've seen it.
Yeah, exactly. You need to watch it live. So, Kev, where can people find you on the social?
At Kevy Clifton, K-E-V-I Clifton.
Lovely stuff. Follow Kevin and give me a follow at James Dilo on Twitter and Instagram. But more importantly, follow the show at WWEGP on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/GorillaPositionWWE. And you know the drill. Sign up to the newsletter. Head to GorillaPositionWWE.com to be notified of all our big news. And there will be some big news. So all you have to do is head there, GorillaPositionWWE.com, enter your name and your email address. It takes 10 seconds. Super simple. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy what is going to be a mega Sunday night Survivor Series, 30th anniversary of Taker, the final farewell? But it's exciting. It's going to be, I know we've slagged off some of the creative leading into it, but the match quality, I can almost guarantee, is going to be stupendous. There you go. That's a word. And that wasn't even in the fans' favorite words on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. This has been a Starstruck Media production. We shall see you on Monday for our Survivor Series reaction special.